Ever been driving with like a firearm tucked away somewhere in your car,
Oh, yeah.
maybe in the trunk,
Sure.
or even just the glove compartment? You might be surprised to learn that even if it's like locked away,
Right.
totally separate from whatever else you're doing,
Yeah.
you could be facing some serious legal trouble alongside any other charges,
Oh, absolutely.
thanks to a Supreme Court case that really shook things up
Yeah.
in the world of firearms law.
For sure.
It's that.
It all boils down to how the law defines carrying
Yeah.
a firearm,
Okay.
especially when drug offenses are
Oh,
part of
yeah.
the equation.
Got it.
We're talking about 18 USC section 924 C1,
Huh?
a federal law that adds some hefty penalties.
Okay.
We're talking years in prison
Wow.
to anyone convicted of using or carrying a firearm during a drug trafficking crime.
Okay, so let's unpack this law a bit.
Sure.
It seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
If you're caught with a gun while dealing drugs,
Right.
you're in big trouble.
Big trouble.
But where does the line get drawn?
Well, it might seem straightforward on the surface,
Right.
but the devil's in the details.
Okay.
Back in 1998, the Supreme Court heard the case of Bailey v. United States, and their decision in that case actually narrowed the definition of use
Okay.
to mean actively employing the firearm during the crime.
Interesting.
This seemingly small change
Yeah.
had a huge ripple effect, suddenly putting the spotlight on the word carry,
Okay.
setting the stage for our main event today,
Right.
Muscarello v. United States.
So Muscarello, this is where things get really interesting.
Absolutely. This case brought two seemingly different situations to the Supreme Court,
Okay.
both revolving around the same fundamental question.
Right.
Does carrying a firearm have to mean
Okay.
physically having it on your person?
Wait, so two different cases ended up
Exactly.
before the Supreme Court together.
The first involved Frank Muscarello,
Okay.
who was caught selling marijuana with a gun locked in his truck's glove compartment.
Wow.
The second involved a duo,
Okay.
Cleveland and Gray Santana, who
Oh.
had guns in their car trunk
Okay.
during a drug theft attempt.
So you have two different scenarios.
Right.
One with a gun in the glove box
Yeah.
during a drug deal, and another with guns in the trunk during a theft.
During a theft.
But both boil down to the same legal question. What
Exactly.
does it truly mean
Yeah.
to carry a firearm under this law? So how did the Supreme Court handle these two cases? Did they
Well,
see them as completely different?
that's where things take a turn for the unexpected.
Okay.
The court decided to combine the appeals,
Wow.
recognizing that the core issue in both cases
Yeah.
was the interpretation of
Sure.
that one single word.
Carry. Carry.
And their decision in Muscarello
Okay.
would end up having a massive impact
Yeah.
on how this law is applied.
I bet the legal teams in both cases
Oh, for sure.
had some interesting argument
Absolutely.
about what carry really means
Oh,
in this context.
yeah.
Did they stick to typical
God,
legal definitions?
they definitely got creative. And
Oh.
that's part of what makes this case so fascinating.
Okay.
Justice Breyer, who wrote the majority opinion,
Okay.
went way beyond the typical legal dictionaries to make his point.
Okay.
He even cited historical texts like the Federalist Papers, you know, those essays
Yeah.
written by the Founding
The
Fathers,
Founding Fathers.
to demonstrate that carry
Okay.
has historically included the idea of conveying something in a vehicle.
Wait, they cited the Federalist Papers.
They did.
I would have thought they'd stick to legal precedents.
Oh.
And maybe some linguistics textbooks.
And that's not all.
There's more.
To really drive home their point,
Okay.
they even cited Moby Dick.
We dick.
Imagine that.
Wow,
A
yeah.
classic novel about a giant whale
Yeah.
making an appearance in a Supreme Court case
That's wild.
about guns and drugs.
Moby Dick. That's incredible.
It is.
I guess you never know
You never know.
where legal arguments will
Right.
find inspiration.
Inspiration can come from anywhere.
But how do they connect a novel about whaling?
Well, their point was to show that
Okay.
carry doesn't always mean
Right.
literally holding something on your person.
Yeah.
It's like saying, I'm carrying groceries in my car.
Yeah.
You don't mean the bags are literally in your hands.
Right.
Yeah.
You mean they're being conveyed
Conveyed
in your
in
vehicle,
your vehicle.
and that's the interpretation
And that's exactly the interpretation
to firearms
to firearms.
in these cases. So basically, they were arguing
Yeah.
that if you're transporting a gun in your vehicle,
Right.
You're carrying it.
You're carrying it.
Regardless of whether it's on your person or locked away somewhere.
Exactly.
And their reasoning went beyond.
It did.
Just the linguistic arguments.
They also argued that a narrow interpretation of carry,
okay,
limiting it to only on-person possession,
yeah,
would actually create absurd results,
right,
that go against the whole point of the law.
What do you mean by absurd results?
Well, think about it this way.
Okay.
The main goal of this law, right, is to deter people from mixing drugs and firearms.
Right.
It's meant to address,
yeah,
the inherent danger, yeah, of that combination.
Makes sense.
But if carry only applies to having a gun physically on you,
right,
then someone with a gun in their glove box during a drug deal,
okay,
could theoretically get a lighter sentence than someone with a gun in their pocket.
Right.
Even though the potential for harm,
yeah,
is arguably the same.
I see what you mean.
Right.
That does seem a bit backwards.
Yeah.
Especially if the goal is to keep firearms away from drug-related activities.
Right.
Regardless of their exact location,
mm-hmm,
within the vehicle. So if the majority opinion,
yeah,
was all about this broader interpretation of carry.
Broader interpretation.
What did the dissenting justices have to say?
Oh.
Were there any strong counterarguments?
Absolutely.
It sounds like this case really got to the heart of how we interpret laws and what happens when those interpretations clash.
Yeah.
So what about those dissenting opinions? Were there any justices who disagreed with this broader definition of carry?
Oh, absolutely. Justice Ginsburg, known for her sharp legal mind and powerful dissents, led the charge against the majority opinion. She argued passionately for what's called the rule of lenity.
The rule of lenity. That sounds interesting. What does that mean exactly?
It's a principle of legal interpretation that basically says if a law is ambiguous, unclear, or open to multiple interpretations, the court should interpret it in a way that's most favorable to the defendant, the person accused of the crime.
So in this case, Justice Ginsburg felt that the law was ambiguous about what carry really means, and therefore the court should err on the side of a narrower interpretation that wouldn't put someone like Muscarello with a gun locked in his glove compartment at risk of such harsh penalties.
You got it. She argued that the traditional everyday understanding of carry implied actually having something on your person, not just transporting it in a vehicle. To her, the majority opinion stretched the meaning of carry way too far, potentially creating unintended consequences and sweeping people into the net of this law who might not pose the same level of threat as someone walking around with a gun in their pocket.
That makes sense. I can see how a broad interpretation could raise concerns about overreach, catching people who weren't necessarily intending to use a firearm during a drug crime.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see the logic in the majority opinion, especially with the goal of keeping drugs and guns separate. It seems like there's a real tension here between interpreting the law as written and considering the potential real-world consequences of that interpretation.
Exactly. And that's what makes Muscarello such a landmark case. It forces us to grapple with the complexities of legal interpretation, weighing the plain meaning of words against the intent behind a law and the potential impact on individuals caught in the legal system.
So we've got these two competing views, the broad interpretation focusing on conveyance and the narrow interpretation sticking to on-person possession.
Mm-hmm.
How did the Muscarello decision ultimately affect how the law is applied in practice?
Well, Muscarello really shifted the landscape. It became the guiding precedent for Section 924C1 cases across the country. Before Muscarello, a lot of courts operated under the assumption that a firearm had to be immediately available to be considered carried during a drug offense. But this case threw that idea out the window.
So after Muscarello, it didn't matter if the gun was within easy reach, hidden away, or even locked up. Just having it in the vehicle during a drug offense could trigger these additional charges.
You got it. And that's a huge deal, especially for lawyers handling these kinds of cases. Muscarello changed the game for both prosecutors and defense attorneys.
I can see how that would be a game changer.
Yeah.
What kind of impact did this have on legal strategies?
Well, for defense attorneys, it became crucial to really understand the nuances of carry and to develop strategies for arguing that a firearm wasn't actually carried during and in relation to a drug offense, that during and in relation to part of the law became incredibly important.
So even if a gun was found in a vehicle, the defense could argue that it wasn't directly connected to the drug crime.
Exactly. They might argue that the gun was simply being transported for a legitimate reason or that it was left in the car by someone else and the defendant had no knowledge of it. The focus shifted to proving that link between the firearm and the drug offense.
That makes sense. And what about prosecutors? How did Muscarello change their approach?
For prosecutors, it broadened the scope of cases where they could potentially apply Section 924C1. They no longer had to prove immediate availability, but they still had to demonstrate that a firearm was present during and in relation to a drug offense. So gathering evidence to establish that connection became even more critical.
So while the playing field shifted, the core legal battle remained the same, proving that link between the firearm and the drug offense.
Right. And this is where things get interesting. Because what about those less clear-cut situations? What happens when the connection between the firearm and the crime is murkier, or the defendant's knowledge of the firearm is in question? That's where Muscarello's broad interpretation really starts to raise some eyebrows.
Okay, now I'm really curious. Let's dig into those gray areas a bit. Can you give me some examples of these trickier scenarios where the Muscarello precedent might lead to some tough questions?
Absolutely. Let's say, for instance, you have a situation where someone is driving a car that's not theirs, and they get pulled over for a minor traffic violation. During a search of the vehicle, the police find a firearm tucked away in the glove compartment. Unbeknownst to the driver, there are also drugs hidden somewhere else in the car.
Whoa, so the driver had no idea about the drugs or the gun. Would they still be on the hook for firearms charges under Muscarello?
That's a great question, and it really highlights the complexity of these situations. Technically, under the broad interpretation of Carey, the presence of the firearm in the vehicle during a drug offense could potentially trigger those charges. However, proving knowledge of the firearm is key here.
So if the prosecution can't prove that the driver knew about the gun, they might not be able to make the case for those additional firearms charges, even though the gun was technically carried in the vehicle during a drug offense.
Exactly. The prosecution would need to demonstrate that the driver had knowledge of the firearm's presence. And that can get tricky. It often comes down to circumstantial evidence, things like fingerprints, statements made by the driver, or any other evidence that suggests they were aware of the gun being there.
I see. So even though Muscarello broadened the definition of carry, it didn't eliminate the requirement of proving a connection between the firearm and the drug offense, and proving knowledge is still a critical part of that.
Precisely. And that leads us to another tricky scenario. What if the firearm wasn't readily accessible at all? What if it was hidden away in a secret compartment, one that the driver might not even know about?
That raises some interesting questions. Would simply having a firearm hidden in a secret compartment, even if the driver was unaware of it, be enough to trigger those harsh penalties under Muscarello?
That's where things get really debatable. Remember, Muscarello itself didn't specifically address the issue of accessibility. So while the broad interpretation of carry could technically encompass even a hidden firearm, there's a lot of room for legal arguments about fairness, due process, and the intent behind the law.
I can see how this would be a point of contention. On the one hand, you have the broad interpretation that focuses on conveyance regardless of accessibility. But on the other hand, you have concerns about holding someone accountable for a firearm they didn't even know was there.
Exactly. And this is where Justice Ginsburg's dissent in Muscarello becomes really relevant. Remember, she argued for a more limited interpretation of carry, emphasizing the traditional understanding of having something on your person. In these borderline cases where the firearm is hidden, inaccessible, and potentially unknown to the defendant, her arguments about the rule of lenity and the potential for overreach gain a lot of traction.
It sounds like Muscarello, while seemingly settling the question of whether carry includes conveyance in a vehicle, actually opened up a whole new set of questions and challenges about the nuances of applying this law in practice.
You hit the nail on the head. And that's why Muscarello, despite being decided decades ago, continues to be such a relevant and influential case. It sparked ongoing legal debates about the finer points of its application, especially in those scenarios where knowledge, intent, and accessibility are less clear-cut.
So Muscarello didn't just expand the definition of carry,
yeah.
It also threw a wrench into the legal system, forcing everyone to rethink how this law is applied and creating a whole new set of challenges for both prosecutors and defense attorneys.
Absolutely. And those challenges are likely to become even more complex as technology continues to evolve.
Oh, that's an interesting thought. We've been talking about cars, trucks, and glove compartments, but what about the future of transportation? What happens when we start talking about drones, self-driving cars, and all these new technologies that are blurring the lines of ownership control and accessibility?
That's a great point. Muscarello essentially set a precedent that could have ripple effects far beyond the world of traditional vehicles. And in part three, we'll dive into those broader implications, exploring how this case might shape the legal landscape in the years to come as technology continues to advance at an incredible pace.
So we've been like really digging deep into Muscarella's The United States and how it broadened the definition of carrying a firearm in the context of drug offenses. It's amazing how one word can have such a ripple effect through the legal system.
Absolutely. It shows how dynamic the law can be,
Uh-huh.
constantly adapting to new situations and societal concerns.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, technology throws a whole new wrench into the mix.
It really does.
We're already seeing the rise of drones, self-driving cars, even ride-sharing services
For sure.
that blur the lines of vehicle ownership.
Right.
How might Muscarello apply in these scenarios
Well,
where the relationship between a person and a vehicle
yeah.
isn't as clear-cut as owning your own car?
It's a fascinating question and one that legal scholars are already grappling with.
Okay.
Imagine a scenario where someone orders a rideshare,
Okay.
and unbeknownst to them,
Right?
the driver has a firearm stored in the vehicle.
Okay.
If they were to be stopped and drugs were found, would the passenger be considered to be carrying that firearm under the Muscarello precedent?
That's a really tricky situation.
It is.
It seems unfair to hold someone responsible for a firearm
Yeah.
they didn't even know was there,
Right.
especially if they don't have ownership or control over the vehicle.
This is where those arguments about knowledge and intent that we
Yeah.
discussed earlier
Right.
become even more crucial.
Right.
The prosecution would have a very difficult time proving that the passenger knew about the firearm
Right.
or had any intention of using it in relation to a drug offense.
But what about the driver in that scenario?
Well, the driver.
They own the vehicle,
Right.
but they might argue
Right.
that they were simply providing a transportation service
Yeah.
and had no knowledge of any illegal activities.
That's where the during and in relation to element of the law becomes really important. The prosecution would need to establish a clear link between the firearm and the drug offense, showing that the driver had knowledge of both and that the firearm was somehow involved in the crime.
Got it.
Simply having a firearm present in the vehicle wouldn't automatically trigger the Muscarello precedent.
So it seems like Muscarello, while providing some clarity on the definition of carry, also opened up Pandora's box of potential legal challenges,
It did.
especially as technology introduces these more complex scenarios.
Precisely. And it highlights the need for lawmakers to carefully consider the implications of their words, recognizing that even seemingly straightforward legal concepts can become incredibly nuanced when applied to real-world situations,
Makes sense.
especially in our rapidly changing
You're right.
technological landscape.
It makes you wonder what other legal concepts might need to be re-examined as technology continues to evolve.
That's a great question.
And we've seen how something like a smartphone can become a tool for committing crimes or
Absolutely.
even evidence
Oh, yeah.
in a criminal investigation. Will we see future court cases grappling with what it means to possess something
Right.
in a digital world
Right.
or what constitutes a search
Yeah.
when we're talking about data stored on the cloud?
Those are excellent points. The law is constantly playing catch up with technology, trying to adapt age-old principles to new and innovative tools. It's safe to say we'll see many more cases like Muscarello in the future, where courts are forced to interpret existing laws in light of emerging technologies and the novel challenges they present.
It sounds like the legal profession
It does.
is in for an exciting,
For sure.
albeit
I'll
complex,
take a.
ride as we navigate these uncharted
I
waters.
think so too.
And for everyone, not just lawyers, Muscarello serves as a reminder
Absolutely.
that the law isn't just a set of static rules.
Right.
It's a living, breathing entity
It is.
that must constantly evolve
Yes.
to keep pace with societal changes and technological
It's
advancements.
your journey, not a destination.
It's also a reminder that understanding the nuances
Right.
of legal language and interpretation is crucial, not just for lawyers, but for all of us who are impacted by the law.
For all of us.
Well said. The more we understand how the law works, the better equipped we are
Absolutely.
to navigate its complexities and advocate for a just and equitable legal system.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And that brings us to the end of our deep dive.
It does.
Into Muscarello v. United States.
Yes, it does.
We hope you found this exploration informative.
Yeah.
Thought-provoking.
For sure.
And maybe even a little bit unsettling as we contemplate the future of law
right.
in a rapidly changing world.
It is a rapidly changing world.
Until next time, keep those legal minds engaged.
Absolutely.
And remember, the law is a journey, not a destination.
It is.